Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. All right, welcome back for another episode of the Fit 40 podcast. Today we have another awesome guest. We have Sean Rivers with us. He is a former Olympic weightlifter. He's got his bachelor's in exercise science. He's beaten alcohol addiction and overcame obesity. He has a podcast of his own, and he also coaches tons of people to help them with their fitness and nutrition goals. A very, very good coach that I cannot wait to pick his brain. So Sean, welcome to the show.
Brian, much appreciated. Just happy to be here, man. So thank you.
Yeah. Hey, happy to have you on, because I know these are some topics I love talking about with people who have walked the walk, because like, if we've never walked a mile in people's shoes, it's sometimes hard to understand and relate. And this is coming from a guy that coaches nothing but moms that are over 40. So having people that have lived it definitely helps. So before we get into, those style of topics, I'd love to know like your origin story. What got you into fitness in the beginning, and what are your goals now that you've been doing this for so long?
Mm-hmm. So for myself, like just how you mentioned, like overcome obesity, for myself, when I was first growing up, like as long as I can remember, always a pretty hefty, overweight kid, even into high school, like just, I think my top end weight was probably around somewhere like 230. And in high school, just very low self-confidence, things like that. Kind of like normal things that kids go through. And as we go through as adults now. So I first got introduced even just into the gym when I started playing football. So it was just like the bare knuckle kind of thing. You go, you throw some weights around. But then there was this kid who transferred to our school our junior year, and his name was Phoenix, and that is his real name, which is awesome. And he is an amazing dude. And he was jacked, and he took me under his wing. He started showing me the ropes, and I lost close to about 40 pounds in about 3 months in that summer. Just from switching a couple things diet-wise, really learning like what training actually is. And that's how I really just got started. From there, I went and got, so I started in accounting actually, for my bachelor's degree, really just because in high school I had gotten an A in accounting and I was like, yeah, I guess I'll do this, but just can't sit still at a desk, like in a cubicle type of setting. And then switched my major to exercise science. Really fell in love with it, just like the ins and outs of everything. And that's where it blossomed into what it is today. And so where I want to bring it, honestly, like I'm not huge on like goals and things like that. At least for me personally, just like my vision, it's not even something where I want to help as many people as I can. I don't know. I think that's bullshit when people say that, just personal opinion, you know, cause I'm not going to help anyone. I'm just here to help my corner of the world, and that's it. So whoever comes in front of me, if I can help them, awesome. And if I can't, you know what? There's someone else out there that can.
Yeah. And I like that you said that, because I think in the beginning, all of us kind of go at it with that approach where it's like, I want to help everybody. I want to help everybody. And it's like, that's a great goal. But if you want to help everybody, you can't help everybody at as best you could if you focused on your strength and your specific thing.
Yep.
So it's more about helping the people that you can as best as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love that. So I know that when it comes to lifting in particular, you said that, or you're like, you have some experience in the Olympic weightlifting. Mm-hmm. And that's a section that I personally have not spent too much time on. And I know that there's a ton of value, especially when it comes to power production, when it comes to emphasizing technique. And I'd love to get your take on what are some of the biggest things that you took from the Olympic weightlifting experience and applied it to the general population, like the average person?
Honestly, I think it has to be the importance of a proper warm-up. This is something I never really took seriously, things like that. And I'm not saying that this is what you have to do for the average person now, right? But we would warm up for anywhere between 20 to 25 minutes at a time, because I came from more of a football, even powerlifting background. And I was a low bar squatter for the majority of my life. And then what happened, I went into Olympic weightlifting and they were like, no, you can't do that. You have to high bar squat. And my traps were so tight that I could not even put the bar on my back. Like I could not rest it on my traps. And so there were sessions that I came in and they would just have me put my trap under a bar, just push up. That way the bar just rests onto my trap. And I just did swinging motions the whole time. And I think like just from a perspective of even just a mental, like, hey, we're flipping that switch of, okay, the rest of the world doesn't really matter right now. How can I be most present in this moment and actually give it my all? That's where I think the warm-up is like very, very beneficial. Of course, there's the physiological benefits, but just from even a mindset component, taking the 5 to 10 minutes to actually properly warm up and just push some blood into your muscles, even just increase a little bit of mobility, I think that's the biggest takeaway that I've had from the Olympic lifting experience.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought it to that place with the mental side of things, because I know, at least with my programming, I intentionally make it so that the warm-up is like the same consistently. So it mm-hmm. can literally be mindless. Like, you know exactly what you're doing and it's just time to tune in, figure out what the heck's going on with your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that people just, they want to go in there and it's more of a, we're so high paced, fast society right now. And so taking that time even to just slow down a little bit is very, very beneficial.
Exactly. Exactly. And then when it comes time to speed it up, I know when it comes to Olympic weightlifting in particular, it's very, very technique focused. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to that, I think a lot of people need to understand, especially with strength training, it's a skill we got to learn. So when it came to actually developing the skill of doing these lifts, what was that experience like? Did you notice that you kind of had to do things differently compared to the traditional way of lifting?
Oh, good Lord. It's you. The biggest thing is just learning to fail. That's all it is. Like your first even month of Olympic weightlifting isn't just like the mobility and the stretching. It's learning how to fail. It's learning how to drop a bar off of your back. It's learning how to escape from a snatch, whether you're going to have that bar go backwards, whether you're going to have that bar go forwards, because the last thing you want is that bar dropping on your head. And so just from a technique standpoint, like no matter who you are, you will never be able to master, like at least from my opinion, I don't think that you'll ever be able to master 100%, this is the absolute perfect way to do it. But you need to come as close as you can to it. And it's just the repetitions and it's the practice. It's practice, it's repetition, and it's boring. But you know what? That's nutrition at the same time. That's lifting. It's the same thing over and over and over. When I was personal training, it was, okay, you know what? When you first go in, you want to do all the flashy exercises and things like that, and you want to make it fun. But like, well, that's not actually what's most beneficial. What's most beneficial is doing the same thing over and over and over and over. So learning how to have consistency. And then just from the technique standpoint, just learning how to fail, because it is so technical. And you can try to brute everything as much as you can with Olympic lifting, but it's only going to get you so far. Because when the 125-pound girl next to me is snatching more than me, it's not – demeaning is the wrong word. But, like, it's hard to watch this.
As a dude that grew into a football, like, lifting style, that sucks your soul. When you're just like, everything that tells me what makes me a man is so weak in this gym.
Yep. Because I'm over here doing cat camels for 20 minutes and she's getting to go and snap. She's putting 200 pounds over her head. And I'm like, how is this even possible? Like,
Yep. I can only imagine how humbling that experience is. And it makes you have a lot of respect for the weight at the same time, because when you understand what it takes to get to her level in particular, it's like, wow, that's a lot. And I think that some people don't understand or don't even respect the weight to the point that they should for moves like that. Mm-hmm. Because I know, like, My girlfriend's actually on her way to Orange Theory right now. And she's like, mm-hmm. I looked at Reddit to see what the workout was. And I'm like, oh, what's on it? And there were snatches. And I'm like, have you ever done a snatch? And I'm like, oh, yeah. It's probably with a dumbbell, which is way less risk versus reward. But still, it's a skill. And I think that people lose that in the group setting where it's like, you know, you got to learn how to do this well, right?
Yeah. I was fortunate to just be part of a team where we had these two guys that were graduate students at the time, because I was doing this through college, and they had been Olympic weightlifting for the good majority of like their life. They knew how to program. It wasn't a huge team. There was maybe 10 of us total, which in a group setting, there were two coaches at the same time. So we got a lot of one-on-one support, and they were able to meet us where we're at. And I think that's a huge component to it, is understanding where someone's at and not trying to progress them too quickly, right? It's, you can go and they can say, all right, well, you know what, this is the perfect program. But if I'm using my shoulders the entire time to go and if my snatch is just an upright row and then I'm standing up tall, like my shoulders, I would probably have two surgeries by now. The technical component to it and the group setting, it can be beneficial, but the more that you can get that one-on-one support, the faster you're going to be able to grow and actually learn that skill.
Exactly. And that's like when you hear about like certain like CrossFit boxes, for example, when they make you do like an introductory course for like 8 weeks, that's how you know it's probably one of the better ones. But then if you're jumping into the high level class first day, it's like probably not ideal.
Yeah. Because I've taught the CrossFit classes and things like that. And when you're first out in your career, you're just like, do it like this, you know? And you're like, why are you not doing it like this? Like, this is how I showed you. And you're not even understanding like, okay, oh my God, body mechanics is coming into play. Like, I need to start this person on the PVC pipe. They have never stepped foot into the gym. Like, and it's that humbling experience again.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought up the PVC pipe, because that's like one of those tells where it's like, you know, a gym is probably good if they've got like a stack of PVC pipes in the corner.
Yep. 100%. And so, I mean, the PVC pipe has been my best friend before, like my best friend and my worst enemy at the same time. You know, you're that guy in the corner that's okay, I'm just going to do the snatches 100 times with the PVC pipe just so that I can even get into a comfortable squat. Like, I'm going to do as many ankle mobility openers as I can just to get comfortably in this squat. That way my hamstrings can touch my calves. Like, so I've been there, so I know what it's like. And when you start someone on a program and it's super, super basic and they're like, I want to do all the cool stuff. And I'm like, no, you need to learn how to do a regular seated row without just pulling with your shoulders and actually squeezing your lats or your rhomboids.
Yep. And it's kind of how you pointed out that in the beginning, you want everybody to do everything. And that's like when we all start off as like instructors. And that's like the mm-hmm. difference between an instructor and a coach. An instructor reads off a menu and tells you, well, this is what's on the menu for today. But the coach is like, what is the thing on this menu that's best for you?
Yeah. And that's even just like where we started the conversation of, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. You were talking about the menu and what's best for you.
Yeah. The difference between an instructor and a coach. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, we all kind of have to make that progression where it's like, we learn, we know what we need to do, and how you made the point of like, how you're like, oh, we got to get them moving well first. That mm-hmm. seems to be lost in a lot of the conversation.
Yeah. I think like just, this wasn't my original train of thought, but like going off of that, like the majority of people that are coming to us, when they're lifting and they're coming from that background of just like doing something an instructor says, you're not even necessarily going through and being like, okay, I'm supposed to feel it in my back. No, you're just going and trying to get through the movements and trying to get a sweat, you know, where sweating is not the end all be all for fat loss. Where, mm-hmm. I mean, my favorite metaphor in a sense that you can say is, okay, well, if you just want to go sweat, just go and sit outside on the beach. And then is that an indicator that you just got a good workout, that you just sat on the beach?
I mean,
you know,
you I know, could that's find what a I way.
Yeah, that's what I tried.
I could find a way to justify that as like, oh, I sat up to take a sip of my margarita. That's a yeah. crunch.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're just trying to make it so that it's just, I don't know. I think we're just lazy a little bit. And just trying to help people understand that, no, you're not lazy. You just have lazy tendencies. You know, you can identify as you're lazy, or you can just say that you have some lazy habits, and it's an opportunity to learn, work through them, grow through them right now.
Yeah. And I think you made a good point too about chasing the right thing, because sweat, for example, is one of those arbitrary things that people chase, and they're like taking the picture of all their sweat on the ground, and they're like, I worked out hard today. And it's like, all right, mm-hmm. somebody probably gave you 20 burpees and there's your sweat. But when it comes to the transition of what things we should be focusing on, what are some things that you like turning the conversation towards, like markers that would probably be better tells of how somebody's progressing rather than like the arbitrary stuff that's like the fluff and the cheerleadery style?
I think at first, like, and of course, like when we're having a general conversation like this, it can be tough. I think when you're first starting with someone, at least from my end, my biggest thing is always your relationship with food. So even before you are trying to get into a calorie deficit, or you want the perfect plan or XYZ, like, how is your relationship with food? Are you stressed about food? Does going out to eat give you anxiety? Like, are you binge eating right now? What's even in your cabinet? Things like that. And really, like, the biggest end all be all for me is what your relationship is to food. And that's the biggest marker that I want to start someone with. Even before we start tracking calories, things like that, I always start people with, hey, let's get like a simple food journal going. And then write down how you feel after the meals. Was there shame, guilt, those lower levels of consciousness? Or was there, okay, you know, I felt full, or I felt hungry, XYZ. So, but just in terms of like a general, okay, how do you still know you're making progress? Like, how your clothes feel, your energy levels. Are you getting up and are you waking up groggy? Are you waking up energized? How are you showing up in your relationships? Those are really big, huge, clear markers and indicators aside from just how much weight you lost on the scale.
Yep. Those are some great ones, because I know people can get very fixated on numbers and like mm-hmm. how much the scale is moving or not moving. And I think one thing a lot of the great coaches I've had on this podcast, yourself included, is like getting away from that stuff, getting towards mm-hmm. the things that are more tangible, things that we have control over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, yep. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, in your own journey, is that like something that you had to figure out and overcome along the way?
Yeah, I used to be a big, big binge eater, like to the point where I would go and I was the most vivid memories that I have are where I was working at Cheesecake Factory, and I would come home at like 1 o'clock in the morning and eat 2 Ben and Jerry's every single night. And it was wild. I was gaining weight like there was no tomorrow. And I think like just the biggest thing, it's less about like how you look and more just about how you feel. Of course, I want people to be healthy, right? And if we're overweight to a degree, we are not going to be a healthy version. But there's all sorts of health. There's the mental health, the physical health, the spiritual health, the financial health. All those are really intertwined. And I know that we focus on the physical side of things. But like when you can combine everything and you can just say, hey, you know what? All of these buckets really feel good for me right now. That's the biggest thing. So just in terms of like my own journey and my own relationship with food, I was a huge binge eater. Just I've done every 1200 calorie diet Monday through Friday and then eaten like 6 pizzas on the weekend, like not an exaggeration, you know? Yeah. And so learning how to, okay, how can I go instead of like having 6 pizzas? Just why do I even want 6 pizzas? Oh, well, you know what? I wanted 6 pizzas because I deprived myself for the entire week. Or hey, you know what? I feel terrible about myself. And so I'm going and eating six pizzas just to make it worse. And I'm just continuing that self-sabotage pattern. And so once you learn some of those patterns and look just a little bit deeper, I think that's when you can start building that better relationship with food for sure.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're really getting at the whole mindfulness aspect of this, because it was funny when you said Ben and Jerry's, I'm like, I have totally had that moment where you have the 1200 calorie pint and you're like, that went down way too fast.
Yep.
The Ben and Jerry's moment. I guess that's a lot of people's rock bottom.
that was two of them for me. And every single night, you know, and when you look at it, when I look back on it, it's hard to tell like in that moment exactly. But when you're able to look back on things and be like, oh my God, like look at that time in my life. Like that job was one of the worst jobs for me ever. Where if you're up for a short story, I'll tell it too.
Hey, I was in the food service industry. I'm all for restaurant stories. Go right ahead.
Well, like my name's Sean, obviously, and we also had another Sean. And this other Sean was the boyfriend of a girl that worked there who was very respected. And so for some reason, like no one really got along with me. And of course, there's a part that I play in that and a projection of, hey, why does everyone hate me? Whatever. I just wanted to go in, do my job, let it be. So one night I go in, get called into the office. Sean, we got to talk to you. I'm like, okay. So they're like, look, we had a terrible review about you the other day. And I was like, oh, all right. What happened? And they were like, well, Tuesday night, XYZ happened. And I was like, I didn't work Tuesday night. And they were like, oh. And they were like, well, it says Sean on here. And I was like, well, did the other Sean work on Tuesday night? And they were like, oh, yeah. And like that just goes to show you like how much this place really hated me. And it was just like really eating at me. And that's like a really big reason of why I was going and just eating my feelings in a sense. I was like, why does everyone hate me? And I didn't have a reason why. And you know what? I don't have a reason why to this day. But like I can look back on that and be like, oh my God, like it's not just about the food. There were other factors in my life that were leading to that. And I think that's like the conversation that I think is really important for people to have is you can focus on the food, but what are the other factors that are also leading to that? Because yes, the super low 1200 calorie diets are leading to that, but your relationship health, your financial health, your mental and spiritual health, all of those factors can lead to those poor patterns and habits of overconsumption as well.
Exactly. And I know so many people listening right now have probably had that moment at work where they're like, Jesus Christ, I hate my boss, I hate my coworkers, and want to just go home and eat whatever. Mm-hmm. And it happens so frequently. And honestly, I know as trainers, I've talked to a few where we're like, don't you just wish like half these people could just quit their jobs? Because then they'd probably lose weight.
Yeah. And I think even with that conversation, like the thing is, I don't think it's our job necessarily to go and tell people, hey, go and quit your job and telling them to do this as in their advice. But I think from our like leadership component, the harder questions that we can ask people, the deeper that they can look inside. And if that was to lead to them quitting their job, and this is in no way like telling people on this podcast to go and quit their job.
I hope everybody heard that. Sean is telling you guys all to be unemployed.
Exactly. I mean, I've been unemployed, so I understand. But like when you can ask yourself harder questions, or at least have someone in your life, like one of us, for example, to go and ask you harder questions, that can give you a lot more clarity than you just trying to change things blindly.
Exactly. And I think too, another thing that a lot of people miss out on is giving themselves some space to have that internal conversation. Because so many times we get stuck in the go, 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 go. And it's like one thing after another. You never have that time to just be with yourself, especially moms. It's like you got one thing after another. And it almost takes some effort to really block out 5-10 minutes to be like, how am I doing?
Mm-hmm. Having that just like check in with yourself, you can go through your entire day very unconsciously, in the sense of, think of when you're driving and you take the same route, you go to the same place, and you spent an hour getting there, and then all of a sudden you're there and you have no idea how you got there. Like, that's an unconscious just pattern and habit that you did, right? And I think that's what happens to a lot of us throughout the day, is it's the same thing with eating. We go and we microwave XYZ, and then we sit it in front of the television and we eat it as fast as we can. We're scrolling on our phone while we do it, and you have no idea even how that meal tasted or how it felt, and you had no time to check in with yourself. One of the best things that I do for my clients that I think will help a lot of the, especially moms that are listening to this, is breaking things up into just little 5-minute segments. And so 5 minutes is such a short amount of time, depending on what you're doing. A 5-minute plank is not a short amount of time, right?
Everything gets slower with a plank.
But when you're going to work, or like, I love this, when you're heading to work or when you get to work, can you take 5 minutes, just 5 minutes, set a timer and just sit and be, just sit and breathe. And you do that once, twice, three times a day. If it's just once, great. And if you do that once a week, awesome. Next week, can you do it twice a week? The week after that, can you do it three times? And that just gives you that start to practice how to really embody stillness and check in with yourself and see how you're actually feeling.
Yeah. And I know I can sympathize with people listening right now that are just like cringing at the thought of like sitting still and not doing anything, because mm-hmm. I'm super ADD. I get it. But when you can like even put on like some yoga tunes or something, or just like something to center yourself and be like, all right, I'm going to calmly just think right now. It's a game changer.
Mm-hmm. Even because like I enjoy like the spiritual realm as well. Just as much as like the physical external world of everything that we're doing, I enjoy all the internal stuff too. And you can even take just simple breathing practices like box breathing. Inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds. You can do that 3 times and your nervous system can change like that. Like, it can change just a quantum leap into a much, much less fight or flight state. And if you can do that, the more that you can regulate that, the better your decision-making comes as well.
Yeah, because you get really good at having that internal conversation, which mm-hmm. honestly, like I've heard that some people don't have any inner monologue, and I'm like, how do you live?
Yeah. Like,
but that's a different story. But I want to go back to something that you brought up before about like how people go through the same day. They have the same stuff going on, and it's kind of mindless. Another thing that seems to happen a lot is that people fall into saying the same story about themselves or complaining mm-hmm. about the same things over and over again. And mm-hmm. it becomes kind of mindless too, where it's like, this is my thing that I feel like talking about all the time. And that can play a big role too.
Mm-hmm. So with that, when I even just look at the mindset component and what mindset is, if you ask 100 people what is mindset, you will get 100 different answers. The yep. best answer that I have ever gotten on what is your mindset is to simply the way that you think about your thinking. And that really clicked with me for some reason. And often we identify as all of these things, just like when we went back to, I'm lazy. Well, no, you're not lazy. You just have lazy tendencies and you just have lazy habits right now. But the more that you continue to tell yourself that you're lazy, the more that you will believe it, because your brain is just here to keep you safe. And so the mm-hmm. more that you can continue to try to keep yourself, your brain is literally trying to keep yourself safe right now. And so with the story that we tell ourselves, one of the best exercises that I can go through is to have people just write things down. And when you write things down, you get things out of your head. Because when you have things in your head, it's like trying to read a book, but the book is up at your face. And then when you write it down, you're able to read it with your arms extended and actually read it, like looking at it. And you're like, oh. So whenever you're stressed and you're telling yourself this certain story about how you are, you can look at it and say, this is just how I am. Or you can just say, this is just how I am thinking. And that was a really big switch for me. And that internal like story that we tell ourselves, that's all life is. That's literally all life is just that story that you tell yourself. So I'm really glad that you brought that up.
Absolutely. And that probably is the best analogy I've heard around mindfulness and like getting stuff down on paper with bringing the book away from your eyes. Like if I were to do anything differently, I would have brought journaling into the coaching process so much sooner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I have my clients journal. And you know what? At the end of the day, and you know this, I can't force anyone to do anything. I can't care. Unfortunately, I can't care about your success more than you do. You need to care about your success more than I do. As much as I really want you to succeed, I can't care about it more than you do. And so with journaling, like I'm not even saying that you have to go and write things like every single night and you have to journal for 30 minutes. When you're holding on to a really like low vibrational emotion, and what I mean by low vibrational emotion is like sadness, shame, things of that nature. Even when you just go tell someone, people always feel better, right? Even though nothing got solved, you always feel better. And journaling can act as the same thing, because all of a sudden you write things down and then you read it. Instead of having it all internalized, it's externalized. Nothing needs to get solved, but just from bringing it internally to externally changes everything.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that, because it makes you think a little bit about like relationships, for example. Like I know personally, I was always the fixer, and it's like, oh, you're venting to me. That means you want me to fix everything. Mm-hmm. And when you make that switch of like asking, hey, am I a sounding board right now? Or do you want me to actually fix it? Like some people don't have that from their partner, and being able to journal can allow you to do that. Like without judgment, without anything like that you have to deal with emotionally, it's just, it's down there. It's out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think like, even just going into this like entire mindfulness conversation that we're having, right? The majority of people aren't having that internal dialogue with themselves. They're continuing to have the same patterns and habits, and there's no interruption of anything. And so even just journaling can be a small pattern interrupt, where one of my favorite things to do with clients when I get them onto like a call, for example, is I'll have people stand up and do jumping jacks and scream the ABCs. Okay. And so it sounds silly and it sounds stupid, right? But when someone comes to you and they're stuck and they're just like, bleh, and you know what? I ate all of this food. I just can't seem to get out of my way. I feel so terrible about myself. All of a sudden, when you just do something that's completely so out of the ordinary, and then your entire nervous system changes, you're like, I don't feel bad anymore. And that's why I have them do it, is because they will feel so silly and stupid doing it that all of a sudden they don't feel those shameful, sad emotions anymore. And that's it. It's just a small pattern interruption. And so it's the same thing with journaling or relationships, talking things through, just getting things out into the open.
Yeah. And that sounds a little bit almost like
a question there. Sorry.
No. I mean, that sounds a little bit like a Tony Robbins ish when he like gets people to like scream and like wave their arms up in the air. And it's like, it allows you to disconnect a little bit and like just kind of get outside yourself.
Yeah. There's definitely physiological components to it. And I don't know all the science behind it, but especially with our nervous system, we can trap a lot of emotion in our body, like even in our tissues. And so the same reason why when people do hip work, right? and like do a hip mobility class or yoga session. Some people can even cry during things like that. And I know I'm getting a little bit more woo-woo here in a sense, but that's a little bit more of like who I am, right?
Yeah, and some of us that have been in this long enough have all heard stories where it's like you get on the massage table or you get stretched out and all of a sudden you're like mm-hmm. bawling and you're like, yep. wow, there's something more to this.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I tell people, you know what? Take what resonates and discard what doesn't, because no one is supposed to agree with me 100% on every single thing that I say, and that's okay.
It's election season, man. It's time to just jump on and blindly say yes to everything.
I know. And you know what? We need purple right now, and that's just not what we have. We have red and blue, and you need purple. You do.
I like that. I haven't heard that before, but I'm going to start saying it.
Yep. Well, I mean, I'm not going to get into politics and things like that. I don't have like a huge stance on them.
No, we've got, that's the thing about fitness that I think people discount the most is the fact that when you are so focused on your fitness and your nutrition and like staying on point, all this outside stuff, you don't really have the energy for. You don't really have the time to devote to getting in internet battles and going down the rabbit hole because you're like, I got my workout. I can't really like sacrifice this time.
Yeah. Well, there's a huge energy component to even just working out and making like better choices and creating a healthier version of yourself. And all of a sudden, you're having more and more positive energy enter and flow through you. And that's what you're radiating as well. And now when you're into and like can see that negative emotion and you're intertwined in it, you're like, ooh, I don't even want this. Yep. Like things like that. The same thing with watching the news. Have your own opinion on the news. I don't care. But like watching the news, it's all negative, right? And now if I was to go and watch the news, I'm like, why would I want to watch this? You know, even if I'm doing cardio and it's up on the television, I'm like, what are they doing? Like things like that. And you start to repel it a little bit more.
Exactly. Because you get so good at feeling good, you're like, oh, I don't want this negativity in my life. Like you find mm-hmm. yourself in social circles that like love to get negative and you're just like, I don't feel like I belong here anymore.
Yeah. That's one of the things about like really growing, especially health-wise, you start to lose different people because people that are around you don't have those same, I'll call it goals as you do, but really it's more just people don't have those same core values now. They're not valuing their health as much as you are, and not saying that one is good or bad, okay? But just saying that now your core values don't align and now there's that disconnect. And so it's harder. You feel like a little bit of an outcast, but really all that's happening is you're shedding like a layer of yourself. You're shedding like an old skin and you're evolving and able to go and fit into a new group now, a new group with more core values that align with your own. And that's really how we grow when it's difficult.
Yep. And to bring it full circle back to mindset, this is reminding me a lot of the Carol Dweck book where it's like we have people that are fixed and then we have the growth mm-hmm. mindset. And it is sad to say that it feels like the majority of people are in a fixed mindset, but you kind of have to embrace the growth mindset when it comes to stuff like this. And even when it comes to finding new people that are also in that camp too.
Mm-hmm. I think like even with the fixed and growth mindset, we've been taught from such a young age of we don't want to be wrong. Why would you want to be wrong? You know, even in school, you raise your hand and you get a question wrong, you're embarrassed, right? And so if that's like what you think from such a young age, why would you want to be wrong at an older age? You know, I think it's the same thing.
And you know what's interesting? When you do have that feedback mentality of like you take it in and you form your own opinion and you're like, yeah, I think I was wrong on that. It kind of messes with people's heads a little because mm-hmm. when we say somebody's wrong, we're so ready for them to be like, no, fuck you. You know what? No. But mm-hmm. it's kind of like, oh my God, what do I do with this? Because we're so unable to have those types of conversations, it feels like sometimes.
Yeah. And the thing is like, I think a majority of people, the issue with why we want to go and fight about things as well is because we don't really know what hill we would prefer to die on. We haven't even done enough research on why we are backing up a specific thing. We heard one thing from someone that we think we trust, and all of a sudden, no, this is correct. This is like, because I believe it. But the thing is, based on your experiences and based on my experiences, we could both go and hear the same thing and perceive it in a completely different way. And you could believe one thing, I could believe another thing, even though we heard the same thing. Yep. And so now we want to go and fight about it because we want to stay safe and we want to feel seen and heard.
Yep. And you have just described, for the ladies and gentlemen listening right now, the fitness and nutrition space, because there are so many camps, there are so many tribes that are like, my way, my way. And mm-hmm. we're all trying to get the same thing. We're all trying mm-hmm. to live longer, live healthier, and live our best life. But there's a million ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, for people to take the most out of this episode that they can, and hopefully I was able to provide some value for them, whether they agree with me or not. Again, take what resonates and discard what doesn't, which I think is one of the most important things that you can do as a person. And so whether you work with Brian, whether you work with myself, whether you do carnivore, vegan, all of these different camps, right? It's really just about finding what's going to be sustainable for you, because so many different diets and lifestyles can work for you. And whether you want to go and trial and error them all, or whether you want to go and hire someone where you really truly believe that that's the person that's going to help you quantum leap and finally get the result that you want, it's really just so individualized. And I understand how social media is polarizing. That's also a little bit of how we stand out in a sense, right? If you were trying to, so again, to bring this full circle, just like how we started the podcast, where you want to help everyone, right? But you can't. You can't help everyone. And so you have to be a little bit more polarizing. And so the things that I do with my clients, you're not going to do the exact same thing. Again, under the umbrella of we're trying to create healthier people, and we're trying to help people build more confidence. We're trying to have people actually feel good about themselves. Again, it's that same umbrella, but all that's happening is that we're just taking two different avenues. That's all that's yep. happening.
Exactly. And that's a good litmus test to like tell if somebody's worth listening to. Like, you hear these nutrition gurus, these fitness gurus that are like, this is the way. It's like, mm-hmm. if they're saying that to everybody, that's not going to apply.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think like you have to be, as a coach especially, like not to go away from your values. And when I say values, that has nothing to do with like nutrition and food and sleep and things like that. Those aren't values, right? You have to remain with your values, but you have to be adaptable to the client as well. You have to say, okay, well, this is working for this person, but this isn't working for this person. And so how can I go and make this something where they can actually learn how to follow this, and this is what's actually going to work for them, but my client Susie over here follows this, and this is what works for her. And so I think being adaptable, especially as a coach, is something that you need to have. It's not, okay, everyone does carnivore and that's the only way. And then after a month, like three people followed it and 20 people couldn't. And you're like, yeah, you just don't want it enough.
Yeah. But I mean, come on. If you don't work the program won't work. Like, come on.
I know. And
that's my least favorite saying of all time. That's basically like, I'm not listening to a word you say, just do what I say and shut the hell up.
Yeah. And that's that double-edged sword that, as a coach, you need to grow and understand, where there are going to be some clients where they come in, they're super compliant, they're super gung-ho about it, they already trust the process, and they're able to make changes like that, and they're able to completely change their lifestyle. And then there's other people that they're not going to be compliant, in a sense of, this is the program, like, why aren't you following this? This is what I gave you. Well, no, there are other factors to it. It's not just that we're all robots. It's a give and take. And so finding that energy exchange of when to push and challenge someone of, all right, you know what? This is your third week in a row of, we came up with a game plan of how to go out to eat and you didn't follow it, versus, you know, okay, well, it's your third week and you still couldn't follow the program, so just screw it all. There needs to be that give and take, and you need to learn when to challenge someone and when to just be like, hey, you know what? This isn't working.
Yep, exactly. And that's the skill of coaching, because you learn a lot when anybody listening right now, if you ever worked with a coach and you've presented them with that issue where it's like, this just isn't working for me, how they respond tells you a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are they willing to adapt, or are they doubling down saying, nope, it's your fault?
Yeah. And I think in reality, it's both of your fault. That's what it is. It's both of your fault. And so when you can both just completely take responsibility for that, you're able to grow that relationship and actually see if it's a relationship that's going to work and be beneficial for each of you.
Exactly. Because when it comes to relationships, it's never 100%, 0%. There's always something.
It takes two to tango. That's it.
It does. It does. And on that note, I don't want to lose any of the magic, so I'm going to ask our final question. Okay. So I've been adopting the leave a question for the next guest. So I'll get yours once we hop off. But this one comes from Rachel Trotta. And if you guys haven't listened to that one yet, highly, highly recommend. Just scroll back after this. But let's see. So Sean, if you could start your coaching career from scratch right now, what is something that you would do differently?
I would market myself more, and I would be more open to sharing my own path and what has worked for me. Not saying that that's what everyone needs to do, but I think in the beginning, I was a little bit more hesitant of saying, hey, this is what worked for me, and more of just like following the trends of what everyone else is doing. And I think I lost my way a little bit, where you kind of lose who you are, in a sense of you're trying to fulfill everyone. And so, oh, well, this is what everyone else is doing, so this is what I have to talk about, versus just saying, hey, this is what worked for me, and just sharing my own story a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think there is that fear that we're going to get called out or whatever, but at the end of the day, if you're sharing your own story, who's going to say bullshit? Like, no, I lived it. I know that this worked.
Yep. And that's it. So I think, we all have like a very unique story for ourselves, and just being able to take responsibility and ownership and just understanding that's what shaped you into who you are today is very helpful to look back on and zoom out a little bit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this conversation was awesome. I know that we touched on a lot of stuff. I didn't even know which direction it was going to go, but I love everything that we talked about. Now, everybody listening, I know that you probably heard one or two things in there that you're like, wow, I wish my friend heard this, or I wish that family member heard this. Don't even think about it. Just send it to them right now and just be like, you got to listen to this. And if you want to make sure you don't miss another episode, make sure to hit that follow button. Now, if you want to find Sean, where can they find you? And if they're like, wow, I want to see more of what he's putting out.
Yes. So pretty much everywhere is at Growth by Sean. I put all my podcasts out on all the streaming platforms, Apple, Spotify, all that jazz. And then Instagram, YouTube, TikTok are all at Growth by Sean. And then my business Facebook page is, I think it's Growth by Sean Nutrition Coaching. So pretty much if you look up Growth by Sean, you'll find me. You'll find me somewhere.
Perfect. And that's actually going to all be in the show notes, so you guys don't even have to go looking for them. Just scroll down, click away. Now, this was just incredible. Thank you again for coming on. Really, really do appreciate it. So thank you guys for listening in. I hope to see you all next week for the next podcast. But in the meantime, go kick some ass. I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian.